But like I said, Yeshua does not introduce, he does not tell this parable to introduce the idea of Gehenna or the idea of Gan Eden, or to tell his disciples some new information about the afterlife that they did not already know. The details of Gan Eden and Gehenna are incidental, and they're directly derived from Pharisaic theology. So we can learn several things about heaven incidentally from the parable. We learn that this is a spiritual place, non-corporeal, not a physical place, not literally some place under the earth, in the sky. It's a region of Sheol, the place of the dead, and it's separated by a great divide from Gehenna. It is where it's the place of reward. And the rich man in Gehenna can see Lazarus and Abraham and recognizes Lazarus. Abraham tells him, remember Lazarus received. These are important details. Here's my point. We learn from this several things about the enduring, undying human spirit. Though disembodied, the spirit, the soul, the neshama retains something of a recognizable human form. They saw each other. They didn't see a gas, you know? They didn't see some gaseous, amorphous, glowy light across the way. It's like Samuel the prophet coming up. I mentioned Samuel the prophet. Someone brought up Samuel the prophet. When the witch of Endor calls up Samuel's soul from Sheol, and Saul says, "What's he look like?" He says, "I see a man with a beard and an old man, and he's got a robe and a belt around his waist." And Saul says, "That's Samuel." They recognize him. Or Moses on the Mount of Transfiguration. You know, Elijah, we know Elijah, he's alive, fine, but Moses is dead. But the disciples, they see him, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Moses. Recognizable. This is similar to what the mystics say about souls. In the world of souls, that after a soul leaves this body, it takes on an ethereal garment in the guise of the physical body from which it was separated, not necessarily at the same age as at the time of death, but that's what the mystics say. Saul recognized Samuel as an old man wrapped in a robe because that was the last time he had seen him. However, if the last time he had seen him might have been when he was a young man, you would have seen him as a young man. This is what the mystics say about it. Anyway, okay, so these are things that we learn. That the soul, though disembodied, it retains recognizable human form. Number two, that the spirit, the soul, and I mean the neshama, though severed from the mind, from the consciousness, nevertheless retains the consciousness, even a human consciousness, a sense of self, a sense of perception, and a sense of recognition, which means a sense of other. So the spirit is not just an amorphous, gaseous, undefined, floaty presence, like a divine feeling out there, but it carries the impress of real humanity on it. This is really important. I mean, this is fascinating. It's like a ghost. Number three, the spirit carries, and this is somewhat redundant, but the spirit carries the memories of the self. Not a new self, not a different self, but the memories of life in the body. Abraham says, "My son, remember." Number four, the spirit recognizes others that it knew in the body. Number five, the spirit can communicate with other spirits in a manner of speech, so it seems. And number six, the spirit is aware of the passage of time. This is contrary to what everyone will tell you. Everyone will say that as soon as the spirit leaves, you're in eternity, now you're in eternity. Who said you went to eternity? Where do we read that you go to eternity? I don't know. I mean, maybe there is some place where it says, and he went to eternity. Maybe I just didn't read that part. But as I read the book of Revelation, I see souls, spirits, disembodied spirits under the throne, actually under the altar, it says, and they're crying out. These are souls of martyrs in the courts of the heavenlies, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, will you refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell on earth? And it says, and there will be given to each of them a white robe, and they were told that they should rest for a little while longer until, these are the linear statements, rest for a while longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who were to be killed, even as they have been, would be completed also. This is Revelation 6, 10 to 11. You have soul. This teaches us another thing, that it's not every desire is fulfilled. This is one of the things, when you go into bliss, every desire will be fulfilled. Their desire for vengeance is not fulfilled yet. They have to wait for it. They have a sense of injustice that was committed, that they're waiting for. Number 7, the Spirit is concerned for those who still remain behind. How about that? The rich man in torment is concerned for his brothers that he left behind. If the rich man in Gehenna, this is the bad guy in the story, is concerned for those he left behind, how much more so the righteous in paradise? Our loved ones. Do they long for us as we long for them? Yes. They pray and intercede on our behalf. If the rich man in Gehenna prays and intercedes and attempts to intercede on behalf of his brothers left behind, how much more so the righteous? Number 8. We learn from this that the Spirit is very much alive, feeling, hoping, remembering, waiting, and anticipating, conscious. So these are things that we can learn from the Pharisaic view of life after death and heaven and hell, in the teachings of our master. Of course, there's quite a bit more to learn. These are just kind of like, these are general observations from one parable. But my main point is that this is not something new. This is not some new information that he was like, and now I'm going to tell you about heaven and hell. But rather, he's speaking to Jews, to whom he's speaking to people that he assumes already know about heaven and hell, because their fellow religious Jews.